Hey, thanks so much for listening to this message. My name is Jason, and I'm one of the ministers here at the Madison Church of Christ. It's our hope and prayer that the teaching you hear today will bless your life and draw you closer to God. If you're ever in the Madison area, we'd love for you to stop by and study the Bible with us on Sundays at 5 p.m. or Wednesdays at 7 p.m. If you have questions about the Bible or want to know more about the Madison Church, you can find us online at madisonchurch.org. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, as well as our sermons podcast, Madison Church of Christ Sermons. Thanks again for stopping by. I hope this study is a blessing to you.
Appreciate y'all being here tonight. This is, unfortunately for you, this is my last week teaching, I know. This is on the chapter of protecting the vulnerable in the Men We Need book. And so just to go over what we talked about last week, we talked about the need for men to fulfill their roles to protect the vulnerable, how it's a man's role to protect the vulnerable in his area of influence with whatever resources he has available to him, material, physical, spiritual, financial. Even though we live in a culture that sometimes doesn't acknowledge that need or see that need, we still need to be able to protect the people around us, even if they're unaware of that we're there and willing to step up. And we need to be willing to step up to address difficult situations. You know, we might not think all of us are big, tough guys. Some of you are. I'm not one of them, but you may feel inadequate sometimes to step up to the task. But the thing is, if we're talking about vulnerable people out there, because of who we are, how God made us, 99 times out of 100, we are a lot more capable of dealing with the situation than the person who needs our help. So people need us to be willing to step up. So last week we were talking more about just the culture, society in general, but this week we're going to focus more on family and our homes. Yeah, that's a great picture right there, isn't it? So we're going to start off talking about my wife, and we have it. Ultimate betrayal here. So when Mike and I met, it was kind of a whirlwind romance. And I'm going to use personal stories here because, well, that's what I know. But feel free to speak up, step in with comments or any questions or anything on your own. But when we met, it was June 1st, 2001, July 28th, we got engaged, and December 22nd, we were married. And what I want to talk about first, like we ended up last week, we were kind of talking about people that we admire, people that we respect. A lot of times we'll transfer the feelings that we have for them to people that they hold dear just because of how well we think of a certain person. So, we can have that influence on people if we're the kind of people that, meet our responsibilities, that do what we say we're going to do. The way people see us, just people that know us are going to benefit from the fact that we are the kind of people that we're supposed to be. And so that takes me into what I was going to talk about here with my wife. What happens in men's Bible class stays in men's Bible class. Y'all, please do not tell my wife or daughter that I have their picture up in here, so I don't want to get in trouble. But this is my wife on the left here when she was in second grade, and that picture's pretty much her. She's sweet, lovable, and cute as all get out. But when I was, me and Katie were going out, and I was thinking about proposing. I remember feeling such a responsibility to her, and I'd never, I've been out with girls before, and been serious before, but I'd never felt this responsibility all of a sudden with what I was considering, not just to her, but to her family. Like I was responsible for her, and I was answerable to them. The picture of Katie here, what I saw was a pretty 24-year-old woman who was sweet, loved God. She was a good Christian woman, and that's who I wanted to marry. But this picture here, her parents, her family saw who she was, but they also remember her here. They remember where she came from. And when I looked at her family, I realized that these people were now trusting me with something that was of utmost, just precious to them. And I felt the weight of that, not in a bad way. I mean, it was, I felt the seriousness and responsibility that I hadn't really ever felt before. And I knew that I would have to answer to them if I ever ended up hurting her or mistreating her in any way. I remember specifically her granddad, my father-in-law's father. He was, like I said, it was whirlwind, so he was just trying to get to know this guy that was obviously really interested in his granddaughter, asking me to go riding with him on a Sunday afternoon, you know, after church. He was a great guy, elder in the church, and I didn't get to know him as well as I liked because a couple of years after we were married, he passed away. But the time we had together, it was great. But I remember just sitting in that car riding with this guy thinking, I'm going to have to answer to him if I ever mistreat his granddaughter. And it kind of reminded me, it doesn't seem to be prominent now, but I know when I was younger in Last Leaders, they had the leader pledges. And the first one was, I'm answerable to God and to society. And with Katie and her family, though, it kind of felt like that. It reminded me of it, but it was, you know, I'm answerable to God and her family. Like I said, it wasn't a dreadful weight or anything. It was just a challenge that I was eager to meet and I was looking forward to. But can you imagine the anger, justifiable rage that they would have felt if I had mistreated their little girl, you know, their granddaughter, their sister, their niece, if I were physically or emotionally abusive, how that would affect her. She had been willing to put her trust and faith in me as a Christian husband to look out for her, to provide for her, to take care of her, to be a good father to any children that we might have. I would be one of the people that she was trusted most in the world. And if I turn my back on that, as Brandt said in the book, it's basically the equivalent of treason. Not just abdicating my role or my responsibilities to her, but actively working against her. I feel that same way. I know how her family feels because I've got a little girl of my own. That's my daughter here on the right. And she's 19 years old now. She's in her first year of school at Harding. So I see who she is. I see who she's become. And those of you who know her, you know, knows that she's really sweet, pretty, snarky, and sarcastic. And she's tough, just like her mom. She's playing softball one year, and she was playing catcher. Batter swung, hit her in the hand, broke her finger. And I asked her, you know, behind the backstop, if she was okay. She said, yeah. So she kept going. After the game, she came up and was like, I need to go to the emergency room. I think I broke my finger. It's like, well, why don't you say something? It's like, well, coach would have pulled me out of the game. So, you know, that's my girl. But I know I pray that Katie and I, that one day she'll meet a Christian man, somebody that will treat her well and will help her and hopefully our grandchildren get to heaven. And I plan to hold them accountable just the same way I felt accountable to Katie and her family because that's his responsibility. And he's, you know, he's now going to be responsible for something that's very precious to me. So I don't know, does anybody have any comments or thoughts they want to share on, us dealing with our wives, the responsibilities, the roles that we have for them? Last week, Pete told me to give you guys a little bit more time to answer. Let the pause, like, get uncomfortable. So I'm going to sit here for a while.
So you...
Go ahead.
You got engaged to a girl you met that day, plus 51?
No, it was June 1st, and July 28th we were engaged. But we only saw each other on weekends because she lived in Nashville and I lived in Montgomery. So, yeah, it was
a frozen joke.
Oh, okay. That was over my head. I do remember Frozen, but
was or
go ahead.
Still am.
having grown up in a household of three boys, and then having Emma Claire, who's my only daughter, you know, there is an understanding. You know, you hear about, you know, daddy's little girl, you know, and then you have that daughter, and yeah, you know, they're just different. Mm-hmm. You know, she's always going to be daddy's little girl. Even when she moves out of the house and finds her a man and gets married and does all those things. So you listen to you talk about these things, yes, it's, I can relate.
Yeah, so it's hard knowing that one day there's going to be a more important man in life than me. That's kind of hard to take, but you know, I'm. That's the way God designed it. That's the way He made it, and that's why it's just we hope so much that it's someone who's Christian and will treat her well, help her and our grandkids get to heaven. Anybody else? I know Robert wants to say something. All right. Let's see. So, if somebody would, I know I've just got one verse up here for Ephesians chapter 5, but if somebody could, would you read verses 22 through 33 of Ephesians chapter 5? So, this is one of the few passages that are in the Bible here that talks about the roles and responsibilities in a marriage, you know, between a husband and a wife. And I know as husbands, we're told, you know, to treat our wives as Christ treated the church, love her the way Christ loved the church. And, you know, at the end there, where it talks about, see that the wife respects her husband. And I know I've heard some people say, see, you know, the wife is supposed to just respect her husband, but the husband's commanded to love his wife. I don't necessarily agree with that because, you know, if you're submitting to Christ, I know mine and I'm sure you too, you know, our submission to Christ is rooted in love. So, you know, I do believe that that's the idea there. But it is kind of interesting that he tells us that that's our role, our responsibility is to love our wives as he loved the church. And it's an awesome responsibility that he's laid on us. But we hear it all the time, like love in popular culture, you know, with our friends, or like just anywhere really. But what does it mean for us to actually love our wives as Christ loved the church? We'll let it go. What's that?
Sacrificially.
Sacrificially.
It's something we choose to do.
Right.
It's not that gushy feeling you feel in the pit of your stomach like when you're dating. It's something we choose to do every day. Whether they're happy with us or not, you know, we choose to love them and do what's best for them.
Yeah.
I think one thing I remember seeing a lot going to a Christian college, and a lot of people, you know, a lot of people are dating each other, and some of them work out, some of them don't, is that, you know, I would say for pretty much everybody, when you get into a relationship, there's some selfish aspect of it. You're not, you know, we're not arbitrarily picking a girl with no feelings whatsoever just because we want to sacrifice. It's because we like her, we want to get things out of it. But then, kind of like what Wesley was saying, there has to be a switch to where it's not just about fulfilling my needs, but it's about putting her needs above other people. And I think where sometimes I've seen people personally in my life struggle with that is it's all about what I get out of it. Mm-hmm. And I love this person and I want them to do well, but I love them because they do these things or they make me feel this way or, you know, whatever about me. Whereas that's good in like the honeymoon phase, but long term, if you just have two people that are just trying to get what they want out of each other, it's not going to be very conducive to marriage.
Yeah. If it ends with the honeymoon phase, I'm kind of worried because once ours ends, it might get a little bit more difficult. But I don't know, 22 years was still. No, I'm just kidding. You can tell where I said that. Yeah, I know. You know, we see a lot of people a lot of times talking about, you know, fell out of love. And it's kind of like what Adam was saying. It's like, you know, when you first meet, yeah, there is, you know, that kind of emotion there, that rush. I mean, obviously, it's kind of a double-edged sword when you're talking about, you know, a wife. And if you're talking in front of your wife, you know, looks aren't the most important thing. You kind of realize as you get older because, you know, then she might get upset. But no, the longer that we've been married, the more I kind of realize things I didn't know then. It's like the Bible when you first start studying it, you know, on a cursory level, you find things that are elementary and, you know, they tend to be true, or they are true. And the deeper you go, the more you learn, you understand at a deeper level, but the cursory principles are still true, even though now you understand at a deeper level. It's kind of the same thing, I think, with marriage, at least what I've seen of it. It's like things I didn't even know would be important. It looks like, you know, God kind of already had a plan knowing who I was, and, you know, Katie's kind of a perfect fit for helping me to be a better person, a better man, and help me fulfill my role. But yeah, it's, once you're married, you know, it is a choice that you make each day to make her the most important person in your life, and to do love her sacrificially, love her, put her first, just like Christ put aside his own desires, his own needs, you know, him being in heaven, came down here basically to live in a slum.
Something that I've said it to all my kids, right? I mean, it goes both ways. It's not just, you know, from a man's perspective, but, you know, when it comes down to it, it's about commitment, right? It's kind of, you're talking about the honeymoon phase, the early dating, you know. After a while, you kind of get to that point where, like, all right, the reality of things set in, and, you know, that whole limerent butterfly feeling goes away, and, like, real life sets in, and, you know, as you get several years into marriage, man, it really starts setting in. As kids start coming into play, and just the rigors of life, and jobs, and bills, and so on and so forth. You know, so when it comes down to it, the foundation of it all is a, just an abject commitment over anything else. You know, to me, that's like the foundational definition of love. It's about being committed, come thick or thin, you know, through it all, and putting everything else aside for it, right?
Yeah.
You know, everything else in my life is just important to me. You know, it's set to the side. And the effort of the commitment I've made to this entity, this marriage, this family.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And I'll actually kind of hit on it a little bit later on too, where, I mean, sometimes, I think I told y'all last week about the guy, you know, I'd spend, you know, go over each week and study with when I first became a Christian, you know, just trying to strengthen myself, get a good foundation. One of the things he said, and it kind of reminded me, you know, what you were just talking about, was feelings don't ever prove anything except that you had a feeling. It doesn't prove, you know, any level of commitment or any, you know, kind of seriousness. But, yeah, there are some days we know, if you've been married any length of time at all, there's bad days. And the one thing you know is we said, no matter what, we're together to the end of the line, you know, until we die, we're together. So we just got to figure out a way to work it out. Kind of reminded me of, I think it was DeSoto came over, no, Cortez, burned his boats, you know, when they came across. You know, he didn't want his men to have an option to kind of slack off or think that there was a way back. It's like, we're either going to go forward and conquer or die. So it's kind of like that. Once you get married, you know, you burn the boats and it's it.
You know, but, you know, also in the Greek, you know, love means many different things. You know, so I think in your relationship, you've got to work at all those aspects. You know, there's days that she may be very attractive. There's mornings when she may wake up and have stinky breath and may not be so attractive. You know, there's days when, you know, she may be totally exhausted and tired, and you've got to work and give more, but, you know, filling her cup and vice versa. You know, so I think every aspect when it comes to all those definitions of love come into play in the marriage, you know, that you got to work at every single one of them to try to make them all work, because there's some more than others, depending on where you're at in that stage.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think, you know, what it all comes down to, what we're talking about here, though, is protecting the vulnerable. This is somebody who's entrusted their life to you, and in that home, you know, it's supposed to be a safe place, and it's up to us, regardless, and I know some people have mentioned it, regardless of if she does her part or, you know, she feels the same way, if she's sweet, you know, evil, depending, I mean, just regardless of what she's going through or doing to you, you know, it's still your role, your responsibility to love her as Christ loved the church. So, yeah, but anyway, any more questions on wives before we move on to kids?
Well, if you look at the passage, you know, at the end it says, see that the wife respects her husband, and a lot of husbands make the mistake of waiting for respect before they show love. If you'll respect me, then I'll love you. Mm-hmm. And then you have this game, but back and forth. She's wanting you to love her before she'll respect you. And so it's this vicious cycle when you're bringing up the relationship between marriage and Christ and the church. Christ did not wait for us to respect him before he loved us.
Yep.
He loves us even when we don't respect him. Even the world, when they don't respect him, he loves the world. And so if we're going to be like Christ as husbands, we can't just be sitting around waiting for respect. Even though that's something that God obviously knows that we need, mm-hmm. and God obviously knows that we want, or else he wouldn't have said it. But the love comes first. And once husbands are who they should be, then it's next to impossible for wives not to be who they need to be. If you are Christ in the home, that respect comes in response to that love.
That's a good point. Yeah, because, you know, he did love us first. So we'll move on now to Ephesians 6:4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So, you know, obviously it takes both parents working together to raise these kids in a Christian home, and God expects us to be partners in doing it. But, you know, he specifically here is charging fathers to bring them up, you know, be the spiritual head of the home, bring them up loving God, understanding God, knowing about God, and to not provoke them. And but this is kind of the easy part compared to a wife, right? Because children are pretty much, for the most part, compliant and easygoing and do what you say. I mean, it's almost like they give respect before we love them, you know. But that's not really how it is. So, but how important are fathers in the home? What's that?
Very, very, very essential. I mean, even the secular statistics talk about how the number of people in prison is astronomical who did not have fathers in the home versus those who did.
Thank you, Vic. That was the next point I was going to make. No, but that's a good point. Yeah, like what Vic was saying, like the single greatest indicator of whether a kid's going to end up in prison is, was he raised by a single mom? And, you know, we don't have any moms in here. We're all, you know, guys, but I'm not trying to step on anybody's toes or attack anyone's mother. You know, both my parents grew up and, you know, raised by their moms. Their dads left when they were very young. My grandmothers were great women. They raised my folks as best they could, and they did a good job. You know, their families ended up in church. You know, we're all Christians. So, and then, you know, many times it's not lady's fault that the guy's gone. Sometimes it is, but the statistics are what the statistics are. The single greatest indicator, it's not, you know, race, region of the country, socioeconomic status. The single greatest indicator of whether or not a person's going to end up in prison is if they were raised by a single mom. And it's even to the point that studies have shown 70% of juvenile crimes, suicides, and teenage mothers were raised by single moms. So I think the thing that we can take away from this is if you love your kids, stay with your wife. Stay in the home with them. You know, we were just talking about, you know, people, you hear a lot of times people who get divorced say, you know, we just fell out of love, we grew apart. It's like, well, man up, figure out a way to get back in love. If you love your kids, regardless of how you feel about your wife, and, you know, that's, we've already discussed that, the relationships you should have there. But if you love your children, care about their well-being, their peace of mind, you need to find a way to make it work and stay in the home. And when it comes to loving our wives, it's a command God gave us, so it's something we can do. Obviously, we talked about, it's not a feeling. It's it's something that is within our power to make a decision and then execute. We don't have to, you know, wait for some mood to strike us or take over. So we need to make sure that, you know, as a society, we need men, and we need to be the kind of men that are going to honor their commitments, love their wives, and stay at home and help them raise their kids. So anyway, we'll move on. Does anybody have any comments there? Go ahead.
For me, that verse is also, I take it more of as a reminder than I do as like direction, because at least in our situation, I'm a lot more hot-headed than my wife is when it comes to our kids, right? So for me, I almost feel like it's like, God's like, look, I know you as guys have a tendency to be a hotter head than your, you know, than your wives. Make sure you're not showing anger as much as just discipline. And so for me, it's, I mean, yes, obviously it's direction, but it's God's way of going, look, I know y'all are going to get angry. It's like, it's understandable, but you got to do this. This is the route you need to go and try to choose discipline over anger. And like, that's what I would try to keep at the forefront of my mind when it is being directed towards my kids.
Yeah, that's a good point. I fall in the same category myself. I kind of, my mom used to love to quote Proverbs to me when I was younger, trying to help me curb that temper. You know, like a man who can control his temper is stronger than the one who can take a city. So I identify with that very well. And, you know, I'll hit on it later, but as you know, fathers, it's kind of a fine line, it seems to me, between, you know, not enough discipline and being overbearing to the point, you know, you're provoking to anger. I mean, I don't know. I know I'm not the only one that struggles with that, raising your kids, and you have to decide, okay, what do you just kind of accept and let go? What do you need to really come down on? Walking that line is a little bit difficult because you go too far either way and you've got bad results.
Correct. I think it's important for us to realize, too, that when we do cross that line, when we do make a mistake, come in too hot, I've been guilty of that, and that it's not unmanly for us to go back to our children and apologize for it. Yeah. And sit down and talk to them calmly and rationally. And we will get more from our kids if we do that than if we just try to let it mellow out and hopefully it fall by the wayside, because many times it doesn't. All it does is build.
Yeah.
And we have to be men enough to admit when we've stepped in to our kids.
And that's a very good point. I know my dad, great father. I mean, he was a great dad. But one thing he did not believe in was, like, if he, in the heat of the moment, got upset, laid down a punishment, there was no going back on it. You know, it wasn't alleviating it. Even later on, he realized, you know, I really kind of overreacted. But I know when my kids, I remember one time specifically, you know, sometimes I'd overreact, have to go back later and apologize, like, hey, look, okay, what you did was wrong, or this wasn't the right way to do it, but I didn't handle it very well, so, you know, just kind of talk to him about that. But I remember I felt like just the best dad on earth one time when my daughter, I mean, she was like 12 or 13. I don't know if I mentioned it, but she is kind of hot-headed too and like snarky, but she got upset with the way I was handling something, and she came back later on and she's like, all right, look, I'm sorry, I didn't handle that well. You know, I mean, it was like killing her to say it, but she came back and said it, and I was like, oh my goodness, I succeeded as a father. I mean, that was just like one of those wins, you know, I just felt great, but yeah, but it looked like it was about killing her to do that. But anybody else?
I think one way that you can really lead your kid to wrath is by not being consistent. You know, in your way that you approach them, the way that you discipline them, being unified with your spouse. You know, they'll test you, they'll play, you know, one against the other. Mm-hmm. You've really got to be strong and you've really got to be consistent. And it even gets difficult when you've got more than one child, because mm-hmm. every child is the same.
Yeah.
You know, so why did you let him do that and not me, and, you know, those types of things. So, yeah, finding that consistency and unified approach between you and your spouse is really important.
Yeah, that's, I know with us, it's always the same way, just kind of, you know, when I was a kid, I did the same thing to my mom and dad. And, hey, I know, all right, if I want this, I'll ask dad. If I want that, I'll ask mom. And my daughter actually has, you know, told me before, like, yeah, I kind of know what I need to ask you and what I need to ask mom. But yeah, for the most part, we try to stay on the same page, like you're saying, because that does at least a lot of problems.
I think one thing to bring it back around, you kids need to learn early on, you never rank over your mom.
Mm-hmm.
You never rank over your mom. And just tell you, say, look, your mom stops. It's you or your mom, it's your mom.
Yep.
And then, I don't know, man, maybe that ain't the way you have it, but I found out the way I have him. Yeah.
No, I absolutely agree, and you don't hear that very often. I'm not sure if y'all ever to hear Mr. Glenn, but you know, he was saying, you know, always make sure your kids know that mom is more important. She is, you know, top of the food chain. Maybe that's not a good way to put it, but you understand where we're coming from. Yeah, it seems to be though out. Side of the church, I know in popular culture that it's inconceivable that somebody would love their husband and their wife more than the children, because the children are the end-all be-all of their existence. And I mean, yes, they're very important, but okay, grandchildren, Norm says. So, but yeah, your kids, if you did your job right, are going to grow up and leave you. Your wife's the one that's there forever.
Yeah, the way I've always kind of thought about it is, if you truly love your kids, you're going to love your wife more.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And if you truly love your wife, you're going to love God more.
Yeah.
You know? That's kind of the path I've always thought about.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know I've always kind of been conscious at home about the way I would react to things with Katie. Now, I'm by no means perfect. The things we're talking about, you know, I failed a lot at, so I'm not teaching anything here. I'm just kind of sharing experiences. But I always try to keep in mind, I want my daughter to expect to be treated a certain way by, you know, the men in her life. And the way she's going to expect men to treat women is how she sees me treating her mom. And my sons, it's the same way. I want them to understand, this is how you treat a woman, you know, so they will mirror our behavior, good or bad. Anybody else? Go ahead.
I will say, I know what you said earlier about if you're struggling in a marriage, reconciling that marriage, doing everything that you can for your kids. But in my family, having my brother gone through a divorce, there's a reason why God hates divorce.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard on the family. He loved his wife as long as he could, to the point to where she didn't love the church, she didn't love him, and she was doing things that were ungodly, that was to a detriment to his child. And when that happened, he threw all his chips in and did everything to get custody of his child. And so there's sometimes when, no matter how bad you want to reconcile, no matter how bad you want to make it work, you have to do what's best for you and your child and focus on God and what's best in that situation, knowing that your spouse may no longer love God the way you do and move on and has moved on to other things that are ungodly.
Yeah.
That is a very difficult situation, but sometimes it just doesn't work out. And you have to pray about it, you have to sacrifice, and you have to do other things.
Yeah.
But, yes, there's definitely reasons why God hates divorce.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we're saying here. The things that we're talking about are ideal situations to maintain the best you can. I mean, there are some, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's not going to work out, but let's see. So this was actually one of the quotes in the book. We're talking about, yes, you need to shelter your children. And now I've got 5 minutes, I think, to get through the rest of this. So I really like this quote, though, because it it showed, like, a lot of people have this idea that I'm a success if my child, you know, is this kind of model student, goes on to this, you know, high level of achievement in this prestigious career. I like what he says here. It's like, you know, you don't exist to make your kids marketable to the corporate world. You're there to shape character as securely and fully as you can before they leave your home. I think most of us in here would agree, and I've told my kids this, to me, you're going to be a success if you're a faithful Christian and you get to heaven. I don't care what you do in this world. I mean, I want them to succeed. I think we all do. But at the end of the day, the most important thing isn't how people here see you as being successful, but how God does. Does anybody have anything on that? I just thought that was a great quote, because there's a lot of people who are very successful in the world but are really messed up at home. So that's not really kind of a guarantee of being a good person. And this was another one. If you haven't seen Jason Helton's class that he did on, you know, Digital Babylon, it was a really good class. It's, you know, on YouTube and the church's podcast, so I'd suggest if you haven't seen it to go do it, especially if you've got kids. In that, he wasn't anti-technology, he was just responsible use of technology, but I still thought that was a great quote. One of the counselors that the author was talking to, he was asking, when's a good time to get your child a cell phone? And that counselor said, after seeing his own children with theirs and, you know, the patients, because he, you know, worked with kids, he's like, well, the best way I can answer that question is whenever you want their childhood to end. So, you know, I thought that was a pretty kind of eye-opening quote. I know we all have different views on when it's appropriate to give our children, you know, certain technology, and we're all, you know, doing the best we can. But, like, my youngest son has a gun, but I won't give him a cell phone. I can more easily control, you know, his interactions with that gun than, you know, I can on the cell phone. And I'll tell you, what's that? I thought somebody said something. Okay. I mean, just this past weekend, it kind of popped up. We, you know, took a trip to Gatlinburg, and my youngest brought a friend of his. And I know, like, at our house, kids have to dock their phones in our room. You know, they can't take them in the rooms. It's got to stay with us overnight. We got software that kind of helps block a lot of stuff. But it kind of hit me. It's like, I know this is a good kid, but I don't know this kid's parents very well. I don't know how diligent they are and what he's got on his phone. And so it just kind of, it's one of those things where you do the best you can to control the situations that they're in, to shape them, to guide them, and to make better choices when you're not around and they have to make these choices on their own. You know, that's kind of the difference between discipline and punishment. You know, punishment, somebody's being punished, you know, that's what they're getting. They're just not going to do that action when you're there and can punish them, but discipline molds them to make the proper decisions on their own when you're not around. And we're talking about the need to be, you know, sheltering our kids, to be protective, but I think as dads too, we also have to understand, especially with our boys, but, you know, our girls too. I like the little girl down here with the M16. But we're kind of, we have that spirit of adventure. We do like to do things, and where their moms might be a little bit scared to let them kind of go out and be kids and learn. You know, that's kind of one of the reasons God made us the way he did, and, you know, we can let them go off and do those things. I know that weekend I was just telling you about Daniel. There's a rock slide, or, you know, rocks on this little mountain nature trail with, you know, water running down it, and Daniel wanted to slide. It was really cold. I'm thinking, you know, he can't slip and crack his head because this is like rock. But it's like bruises, skin knees, maybe a broken bone. I mean, if you're going to be dumb, you better be tough. But, you know, it's like he'll just, I know his mom wouldn't let him do it, but I don't know. I just thought he needs to be a kid, you know, so go on. I think that was the last bell. I had some really great points I haven't gotten to. You guys really missed out. So, but hey, I appreciate it, and we'll not talk to y'all next week.